All right, everyone, ready to dive in. Today, we're tackling the birth of independent India, specifically those crucial years, 1947 to 1950.
Ah, a pivotal moment.
It really is. Picture this, a subcontinent brimming with different languages, religions, cultures, all stepping out from under colonial rule.
Yeah.
It's a story of immense challenges, right? Building a democracy, reviving the economy, uniting a diverse population. How did they even begin?
You hit the nail on the head. It's fascinating how this immense hope for the future bumps up against the realities on the ground. You know, a society still wrestling with its past.
Like you're laying the foundation for a brand new building, but the ground is still shaking from, well, everything that just happened.
Perfect analogy. And speaking of shaking things up, one of the first tremors India had to deal with was partition.
Right, 1947. The split of British India into India and Pakistan.
Exactly. Our sources paint a vivid picture of this event. It wasn't just drawing a line on a map. It unleashed violence, displacement, you know, a wound that would shape India for years to come.
And it's almost like that wound was deepened just a year later with the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi.
Oh, absolutely.
1948 by a Hindu extremist. Makes you pause, right? How do you heal? How do you unite a nation when such deep divisions lead to such violence?
It's a tragedy of immense proportions, and it highlights the contradictions of the time.
How so?
Well, here's Gandhi, a champion of peace, a symbol of unity, becoming a victim of the very forces he was trying to overcome.
It's heartbreaking.
Truly, and it underscores that immense challenge India faced, the challenge of reconciling its diverse communities and forging a shared national identity.
Hope and tragedy, all wrapped up in those early years.
You got it. And in the midst of all this turmoil, India also embarked on this incredible project, building a democracy. Think about it, a newly independent nation choosing to be a democratic republic.
Old move.
Right. It meant creating a constitution, institutions, ensuring representation for all these diverse voices.
I can only imagine those debates during the drafting of the Indian Constitution.
Oh, I bet they were intense. It's fascinating to see how that constitution drew inspiration from so many different places.
Really? Like where?
Well, even from the Government of India Act of 1935, a holdover from British rule.
Wow.
It's a blend of inherited colonial structures with these newly embraced democratic ideals. Speaks volumes about the complexities of nation building, doesn't it?
Like weaving together the past and the present to create a distinctly Indian future.
Precisely. And that weaving process, it wasn't just happening in the political sphere. It had a huge impact on the economic landscape, too.
We're talking about the massive challenge of economic reconstruction, right?
You got it.
After centuries of colonialism, India had to rebuild infrastructure, modernize agriculture, and the list goes on.
Absolutely. And let's not forget the shadow of World War II. Inflation, food shortages, disruptions in trade, all these were realities India had to grapple with.
It's like starting a marathon having just run through an obstacle course.
I like that. And add to that the widespread poverty, millions struggling to make ends meet.
It's a challenge of incredible scale and complexity.
No doubt about it. You really start to grasp the enormity of the task facing these early leaders. It's like they were building a nation while putting out fires left and right.
I know. It's mind-boggling. Okay, so we've talked about the backdrop, this complex landscape.
Hmm?
But how did India actually start to build a functioning political system after the trauma of partition and, you know, Gandhi's assassination?
Well, the Indian National Congress played a crucial role. This was the party that led the independence movement.
Right, right.
And now they were in charge of governing.
So they went from leading the charge for freedom to actually having to run the country.
Exactly. Can you imagine the pressure? The Congress had to translate those promises of independence, economic progress, social justice, a unified India into reality.
I bet that wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Especially with all the internal divisions within the Congress itself. I mean, our sources mention these different factions, each with their own ideas about India's future.
Oh, absolutely. You had figures like Jawaharlal Nehru, India's first prime minister. He was all about a modern, secular, socialist India.
Sounds ambitious.
It was. He emphasized industrialization, scientific advancement, a real forward-looking vision. And then you have someone like Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel, a real pragmatist, focused on consolidating power and bringing all those princely states into the Indian Union.
Hold on. Back up a sec. What were these princely states exactly, and why were they so important in forming independent India?
Great question. You see, when the British left, the Indian subcontinent wasn't this unified entity. scattered across the land were hundreds of these princely states.
Okay.
Essentially, they were kingdoms ruled by local monarchs who had treaties with the British.
So you have this patchwork of independent entities within the borders of a newly formed India. That's a complicated situation.
It was. And Patel was instrumental in negotiating with these rulers sometime. Well, let's just say he used some strong-arm tactics to convince them to join the Indian Union.
So he was essentially weaving together this fragmented map into a unified nation.
Precisely. It was a delicate balancing act, requiring diplomacy, political savvy, and a firm grasp of real politic.
Fascinating. So internally, India is grappling with these integration challenges. But what about externally? How did a brand new nation navigate international relations, especially during the Cold War?
This is where Nehru's vision of non-alignment comes into play.
Non-alignment.
He envisioned India as a leader among newly independent nations, advocating for peace, cooperation, but refusing to take sides in the Cold War.
So not getting pulled into the whole USA versus USSR thing.
Exactly. It was a delicate balancing act.
For sure.
Yeah.
Did it work, this non-alignment strategy?
That's a great question, and one that deserves its own deep dive. It had its ups and downs, but it definitely shaped India's foreign policy for decades to come.
Wow. So India, right out of the gate, was making some bold moves on the world stage. But we can't forget the internal struggles, right? On top of the political and economic challenges, there were huge social hurdles to overcome.
Yeah.
After centuries of colonial rule and these deeply ingrained social hierarchies, how did India tackle issues of social justice and equality?
That's where things get really interesting, where those lofty ideals in the Constitution really come to the forefront. Remember, India had just come out of a system riddled with inequality based on caste, religion, gender. The challenge was to create society that lived up to the promise of equality for everyone.
Yeah, it's really amazing when you think about it, tackling all these deep-rooted social issues while building a nation from scratch. It's a huge undertaking. What specific steps did they take to turn these ideas of equality to real, tangible changes?
One of the biggest things they did was include provisions for affirmative action in the Constitution. The aim was to uplift those communities that had been marginalized historically, especially those disadvantaged by the caste system. They also started initiatives to promote education and economic opportunities for these groups.
So using education and economic empowerment as tools for social change.
Absolutely. They recognized that real equality goes beyond just laws. You need concrete steps to address those socioeconomic disparities that had been around for centuries.
Makes sense. But how did it all play out on the ground? I mean, was there resistance to these big social reforms?
Of course, social change is never easy or universally embraced. There were people who held on to traditional hierarchies, saw these reforms as a threat.
Right.
But the commitment to a more just and equitable society, that remained a driving force.
You know, as we talk about this period, the impact of colonial legacies keeps coming up. It's clear that British rule shaped so much, from economics to social relations. How did India grapple with that legacy while forging its own path?
It's a really crucial point. It's like renovating a house while you're still living in it. You're dealing with what's already there while trying to build something new. Take the Indian Civil Service, for example, that core of the administration.
Yeah.
It continued after independence, but now Indians were filling the roles previously held by British officers.
So a sense of continuity, but also a reclaiming of these institutions.
Exactly. And this adaptation happened in economics, too. Remember, India inherited an economy geared towards the colonial power, not its own people. Untangling that, promoting local industries, creating a self-reliant economy, that was a huge task.
And we talked about this earlier, all this happening against a backdrop of widespread poverty, the aftermath of World War II, the scale of the challenges is just incredible.
It really shows the resilience of those early leaders. Yeah. But the colonial legacy wasn't just economic. It was deeply woven into society, shaping how people saw themselves, their communities, their sense of belonging.
We touched on caste, how the British sometimes reinforce those social hierarchies. What about the tensions between different religious groups? How did those play out after partition?
Well, partition itself was a tragic outcome of those tensions, fueled by that British policy of divide and rule, pitting different groups against each other to maintain control. That was the idea.
Right.
And the legacy, a deeply divided society, a wound that still affects the relationship between India and Pakistan.
It's a stark reminder that decolonization isn't just about political independence.
No, it's not.
It's about unraveling history, addressing those deep social divisions, redefining what it means to be a nation.
Absolutely. It's an ongoing process. This self-discovery and rebuilding, it continues to shape India today.
We've certainly covered a lot today, haven't we? From the joy of independence to the tragedy of partition, the trials of democracy building to the fight for social justice, India's early years were truly remarkable.
They were. It's a period with valuable lessons, lessons about nation building, about the legacy of colonialism, about the human spirit striving for a better future.
I'm left with this sense of awe at the scale of transformation India went through in those early years. It's a story that goes beyond borders. It speaks to the universal challenges of creating a nation, healing old wounds, and building a more just world.
Couldn't agree more. It's a story that makes us think about our own histories, the legacies we carry, and find inspiration in those who came before us.
What a powerful thought. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the founding of independent India. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, keep learning.